All right, let's welcome to the 9 o'clock hour. Three more hours of great high school football coverage for you right here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Elijah Campbell, myself, Big Kenny Adams behind the glass tonight. A lot of fun for you. A lot of games now getting into the late third, fourth quarter. And about 10 o'clock tonight, we'll try to get as many coaches as we can on tonight. It's fall break, so a lot of teams are off, but they're all back next week. This is week 9 of the high school football season. And Kenny, hit it, brother. Scoreboard time. Here we go. Blackman on top of Rockville 28-7. Cannon County on top of the community 7-0. Cascade over Loretto 13-0. Moore County over Collinwood 35-0. Elijah, I haven't got an update on the Coffee County Cookeville score in a while. It was Coffee County 3-0. We have an update.
I'm looking for that one. It's funny you say that because I'm feverishly looking for that
okay.
one. That one we talked about having some big implications there. Coffee County could be a region champs for the win tonight.
Yeah, just pipe in if you find it. Wayne County 7, Cornersville 6. Davis Academy over Good Pasture 20-0. McCauley on top of Ryan 21-14. Fayetteville leads Red Bank 30-0. Forest on top of Richland 21-19. Beachton leads Gallatin 21-7. Pearl Cone in the fourth quarter leads Greenbrier 13-6. Goodness. Eagleville over Huntland 21-7. Smith County leads Jackson County 41-0. Lincoln County over Columbia 8-0. We need a scoreboard update. That's been a while as well. DCA leads Mount Juliet Christian 56-0. That game's in the third quarter. Mount Pleasant leads Summertown 34-0. Columbia Academy trails Nashville Christian 24-14. That's a big region game as well tonight. Hollow Rock Brewston over Perry County 36-22. Stacy Cap leads Portland 21-7. Oakland over Riverdale 35-6. Still 5 minutes to go in the third quarter there. Stewart's Creek over Siegel 14-10. Franklin County leads Spring Hill 28-0. Tullahoma over Lawrence County 10-7. Upperman over DeKalb County 10-7. East Robertson leads Westmoreland 14-7. White House over Stewart County 28-7. And Clay County over Grundy County 24-0. That gets you up to date right now. What's going on? So, yeah, there's a few scores out there, Elijah, like that Coffee County Cookeville game that we need because, as you just said, that could be a big game and a turning moment for tonight for Coffee County as they win the region.
Yeah, and that'd be huge. I mean, that's for a school like that that's obviously not necessarily known for their athletics. I know they did produce Alante Taylor, who is playing for my beloved New Orleans Saints right now. Not necessarily a powerhouse school for athletics, but would be a really cool thing to see them win a region that has a lot of really large schools in them and a team in Lebanon that we thought could be state contenders.
Totally agree. Let's go back to the phone line brought to you by Elijah Campbell Enterprises. Let's bring in Junie Riddle, who's at the Beach Gallatin game. Junie, what's up, brother?
What's going on, guys? Little bit somber news here. I told you all last at the break at halftime that Gallatin was making a really big push, but Beach has opened this one up, guys. I mean, it was a three and out for Gallatin on the first drive, and then the first play for Beach was a 79-yard touchdown to running back Darius Johnson, who they have struggled to get all night. He has two touchdowns. Then the second play of Gallatin's next drive was a pick six. The quarterback got hit as he threw, and it went straight into the slot corner's hand for six. And then, again, another stop by the Beach defense that led to a wide-open touchdown by Kawan Harris. It was about a 50-yard touchdown, and we got a running clock here. We're now in the fourth quarter, 8:40 left to go. It is 42-7 Beach all over this one in the second half. They have clearly made adjustments from what they were doing in the first half.
My goodness, we left you. It was 21-7. Gallatin feeling good about themselves. I want to know what the speech Coach Crabtree from Beach gave his guys because they're putting the beat down now, Junie, on this team.
I tell you what, Joe, I think they must have been listening to Game Blitz because I guess they heard all the things that I was saying about how this freshman quarterback was looking quite impressive and how their Gallatin defense, although looking like they are outmatched, you know, sticking in there and keeping a hard-fought energy in order to keep the game close. But, I mean, it has been nothing but a blowout here in the second half, and it has been wide open. Again, we are now under 8 minutes. The clock is still running. Gallatin is actually now driving. A couple penalties have kept this drive going. They are right outside of the red zone, so maybe an opportunity to get another score and something to build off going into the following week. But I mean, this game is just about wrapped up.
All right, wow. Junie, thanks for the update.
That's definitely surprising.
Yeah, thank you for the update. Call us back when the game's over. Do you mind?
Yeah, absolutely, you all.
Thank you,
and
Junie.
And Beach just got an interception, you, guys, and they are now running it back. So they're going to be taking over and probably run this clock out. I'll call when the game's wrapped up.
Okay, thanks, pal.
Alrighty.
That's Junie Riddle, the Adam Schefter of high school football in Middle
Fantastic
Tennessee.
Fantastic stuff.
Elijah, he sounded a little sad there, like the blowout. I know he doesn't have a favorite,
man,
but he sounded a little down right now that Beach is destroying Gallatin right now.
When you get to go to a cool venue like Gallatin High School's, you kind of want to see it in prime form, right?
Sure.
You want to see it really competitive. It's like going to see your first Tennessee Vols football game at Neyland Stadium between the years of 2007 and 2020. It's very somber. It's disgusting. It's not what it once was.
Hold on. What's your first UT football game? I know they got the big game with Alabama. What's your first UT football game?
Oh, easy. 2002, Tennessee versus Rutgers. Rutgers returned the kickoff, opening kickoff for a touchdown. Tennessee scored 35 unanswered, 135-14. Jason Witten had a touchdown. Kelly Washington had two. They dominated. It was fantastic, but I still remember it like it was yesterday. It was magical.
My goodness. My first game was 1983. They hosted Wichita State, and
wow.
They destroyed them. That's when Reggie White's last year, Willie Gault was there, and then I remember that, but there's
Wichita
been,
State was playing football.
That's right. You know, what's funny is that people ask, I've heard Robbie and Rexford have this discussion about loudest stadiums. You know, every stadium is loud, right? Every stadium, and we'll get back to high school football in just a moment, but I want to ask you this question. So people ask me, oh, Joe, what's the loudest stadium you've ever been in? The loudest stadium I've ever been in was 1990 I don't think you've been born yet, Elijah. Dale Carter ran the second half kickoff back against Florida. There were like 27 Florida football players tried to tackle him, and it was 7-3 at halftime, and he ran this kickoff back, and I promise you, Elijah, I thought Neyland Stadium was going to come apart and just bounce into the Tennessee River. I've never been in a stadium that loud and that scary because it got so loud of that game back in 1990, and it was amazing. And so the stadium's loud, but that's the memory I have from a Tennessee football game back then.
The place shakes. 2004, Tennessee, Florida, and James Wilhoit kicked the field goal after missing the extra point. Hendersonville Commandos legend James Wilhoit, and then drills the 50-yarder, you know, with like 10 seconds left to win the game. That place shook. And that's probably the loudest I've heard a stadium. Cameron Indoor Stadium, Duke basketball game, even though it was a game against Pennsylvania, the loudest I've ever heard it, because the place is just so small, and the first 10 minutes of the game when they're getting up by 30, the place is just so energized and juiced into it. It is surprisingly loud for a random game like that, but it's just so small. So
when you said that about James Wilhoit, I'm not kidding you, my scoreboard update flashed and I got a Hendersonville score. Let's just say James Wilhoit would have not had much action tonight because Baylor leads Hendersonville 56-14.
Yeah, so that I'm not great at math, Joe. So you might need to help me out here. That's he would have to kick at least 15 field goals for them to be back in this game.
It's possible because the game's not over, right? But it's possible. But they're getting that's something right there. A quick final for you,
boy.
The rough season continues for Tullahoma. Lawrence County beat Tullahoma, Elijah, 14-10. So Lawrence County now 5-3 overall. Tullahoma drops to 3-5. It's tough. You know, you win a state championship. I don't care what you say. You win it. Getting back the next year is rough. You look at what's happening to a lot of teams. You know, I know Summit went to the 6A final last year, and they had to replace like 75 guys. Tullahoma, you know, their head coach John Olive wins a state title. He steps down, and they're having a rough year. It's tough, man. But Lawrence County, congratulations to them. They got the job done tonight.
That's a significant win. You want to know why? Because that puts Lawrence County now only a game behind Creekwood. I'm trying to pull up their schedule right now. So Lawrence County got the win tonight. They play Hillwood and Creekwood. Hillwood hasn't had a fantastic season. I expect Lawrence County to beat Hillwood. Creekwood next week, we already mentioned who they're going to play, and I have already forgot because I have the memory of a goldfish. But next week they're going to play Glencliff, our poor beloved Glencliff Colts. I don't think they're going to beat Creekwood there. So to end the season, Joe Dubin,
here we go.
We are probably going to have winner goes to the playoff game between Creekwood and Lawrence County.
That's what we love. I mean, October 28th, my friends, if you like high school football, there's going to be about 35 football games that you can go to that night that are going to determine some big deals happening. Not only playoff seedings, but some teams are going to be going home after that. So that's a big deal right there with that. All right, Elijah, we'll get more of your comments and more of your thoughts. We'll take a break right now. We got 2.5 more hours of great high school football coverage. Many thanks to our good friends at Apple Collision Centers and National Playmakers Academy being part of this great journey with us. You're listening to The Game Blitz right here, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. All right, welcome back to the Game Blitz. Oh, I needed that right there at 9:18 on the night. Brought to you by Apple Collision Center, National Playmakers Academy. Let's go back to the phone line. Brought to you by Elijah Campbell Enterprises. Let's bring in Lance Mackey, who's at the Davidson Academy Good Pastor game. Lance, what's the update, brother?
Yeah, well, last time we talked, there was a big onside kick and then a big fourth down stop by Davidson Academy. We ended up getting two more scores from Davidson Academy, and it ended up being a final of 34-7. Had a big touchdown run from freshman running back Caden.
You can make a name up. We don't care.
Yeah, Caden Smith. Had another big touchdown from number one, who had one receiving as well as one rushing, but. You know, you got to give it up to Good Pasture. Really want to celebrate those kids because they played their hearts out. Just at the end of the day, had too many turnovers and could not stop the run. They played really well, and that's a good team right there. Both those teams are very talented ball clubs, and that's a huge win for Davidson Academy.
It is. Let me ask you, Lance, while we got the game right there, Davidson Academy, obviously, you talk about a huge win for them. What were they doing good tonight? Were they just controlling the line of scrimmage? Were they controlling the air? Were they controlling the run? What were they doing good?
Yeah, pretty much all running the ball. They had Cortland Simmons was just all over the field. He had two touchdowns on the ground plus one passing touchdown. They had that freshman that would come in and spell Simmons when he needed a break. It was breaking big run after big run. And then, like I mentioned the last time I called in, Good Pasture ran a three-quarterback offense. I talked to the coach at halftime about that, and you know, what they really wanted to do was they love this sophomore quarterback. He's got a big arm, but they just want to make sure that you know, he's ready to take a full load. So they've been kind of mixing in a few other players, but I do think that big sophomore they have could end up being that guy for the future. Has a lot of intangibles, but again, he turned the ball over a little bit too much tonight, and that I think that was what kind of did him in.
Absolutely. You know what Bill Parcells says about having two or three quarterbacks? It means you have none. All right, Lance, thanks, brother.
All right, guys. Talk to you soon.
Great job, Lance. All right, Elijah, your turn.
Confidant to another, my man, Rusty Ellis, was in the grand metropolis of Monterey, Tennessee tonight between Monterey and Oneida. Monterey gets a big 42-9 region win. Rusty, thanks for joining us, brother. How was that game?
Absolutely, fellas. I mean, this game comes down to Oneida's inability to stop Monterey's run game and Oneida's inability to get anything going in the run game themselves. That defensively is what Coach Scott Hughes really, really hit on when I talked to him after the game, was just that his guys up front did such a good job of controlling the line of scrimmage, getting good push immediately off the snap. And that allowed their secondary to put together one of their best games of the year because it forced the quarterback, you know, the quarterback's clock and his mental clock's just going a little bit faster. He's letting throws go a little bit earlier. Just a really, really good job all around tonight by Monterey. I would say this is probably their best all-around performance of the season. Offensively, and Elijah, we've talked about this before, the biggest question I've had for Monterey is if the run game isn't working, can they throw the ball well enough to find success to beat good teams? And tonight they ran the ball great. It was again an incredible performance by Mason Bowman. It seems like each week you see something new from him, and after covering him for 4 years, I haven't seen many running backs as talented as that kid is. But Matthew Montgomery just really, really put together a great game through the air tonight, threw a pair of touchdowns, one to Eli Saylor, one to Michael Allred, and then ran for a 66-yarder himself, really showed off his wheels. He's a big kid, too. He's about 6'2", I'd say about 230. So the fact that he was moving that fast down the sideline, really, really impressed with a lot of things I saw in Monterey tonight.
Yeah, I want to go back to Mason Bowman real quick. I mean, the kid's had a phenomenal season so far. A lot of big plays tonight, but it's only a microcosm of the season he's had. And Monterey's really not accustomed to having one of the better rushers in Putnam County. Usually those players are ending up at Cookeville or Upperman, but Monterey's got a really special tailback back there.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of people tend to forget about Monterey, and it's really, really unfortunate because Scott Hughes has done some really, really good things with this program, and a lot of it starts with Mason Bowman. First of all, and I think I said this a couple weeks ago when they beat Lakeway Christian, one of the most respectable young men you'll ever talk to. Not a negative thing to say about him as a person. And if you want a funny thing, I spoke to a former teammate of his for a podcast that I do for work, and he said the funniest thing about him is that he'll never talk trash on the field. I've never heard of a high school football player that doesn't talk trash. But Mason Bowman does a really, really good job of letting his play speak for himself. He impacts both sides of the ball. And it's going to be a long, long time before Monterey sees another kid quite like him. I've been sure to tell Monterey people, appreciate him every time you see him, because players like him don't come through here that often.
Yeah, the Andrew Luck of high school football, it sounds like, with the lack of trash talking. But, Rusty, last one for you, man. I mean, Monterey almost securely in the second spot in Region 2-2A. York winning earlier this year. York beat him 34-20 in Jamestown. Almost all but seals it. York has one more game against Rockwood. If they win that game, York wins the region. But how easy of the game? I know you've been able to watch York this year. Maybe not a ton of Rockwood, but at the end of the season, is it York or Monterey that's going to end up here as region champs?
That's a million-dollar question right there. You know, York, in my opinion, has had moments where they've looked unstoppable offensively. They've got such good playmakers when it comes to guys like Miles Lefeu, Aiden Sweat Thomas, Bryson Bilbrey, who's played a lot of tight end for him this year. They've done a lot of good things offensively, but I feel like, especially the way that both of their seasons are trending, and this might sound crazy to people, I really think there is a realistic possibility that Monterey ends up on the top of this region come the end of the year. Now, obviously, you know, the head-to-head tiebreaker, should it come to that, is going to go to York. But them losing at Gibbs, and obviously Gibbs, really, really solid team, them losing at Gibbs tonight could end up coming back to get them, you know, if total wins comes into play as well. So I really like the way Monterey is playing right now. And Scott Hughes made it very, very clear after this game, they take care of business from here on out. They're getting a home playoff game, and they would be one of the few teams in school history to host a playoff game. That's not something that happens in Monterey every single year. So I like the Wildcats, but I'm not gonna count out the Dragons just yet, because that game against Rockwood has major implications, and that should be a fun one at the end of the year.
Yeah, I highly expect Rockwood to beat Wartburg tonight. And then if that's the case, then that game against York Institute is going to be pretty significant here to end the season. But Rusty, appreciate you joining us, man. I love to be able to talk about these Upper Cumberland schools, do some great work there at the UC Reporter, and excited to keep talking to you as the season goes on.
Absolutely, fellas. Thanks for having me on. Y'all take it easy, all right?
Fantastic stuff. Rusty Ellis, the Upper Cumberland Reporter, as always, giving us some of the best info from the Upper Cumberland. And from one reporter to another, our man Junie Riddle, one last time, gives us a final report, a postmortem, if you will, on Gallatin and Beach. Junie, thanks for joining us, man. I know you're a little bummed out that the game didn't exactly end the way that we wanted to, or that we kind of expected. A lot of different variables kind of went into that. But how did the game end, and what was the experience like, you know, talking to coaches or leaving the stadium and doing your post-game process?
It was a little damper. I'm not going to lie to you. A lot of sad faces, a lot of disappointment at Gallatin. I mean, like I said, the crowd was electric. It wasn't a full crowd, but again, like I said, the stadium is huge. They just didn't fill it out. But two running teams. Props to Beach's two running backs. I mean, they got a really good duo in JP Courtney, but especially Darius Johnson. Darius Johnson just flat out imposed his will on Gallatin's defense. Although Gallatin was getting some stops, I mean, they were having trouble tackling this kid. I mean, after yards after contact, I mean, he was easily just breaking tackles, getting 5-10 extra yards almost every run after getting hit. You know, Riley Ridding ended with 111 yards. And again, you know, Gallatin only had 128 passing yards on the season in total. I mean, the kid was 5'7", 145 pounds. He gave it at all. He's a freshman, very small in stature, going up against well over 6 foot, 190 to 210-pound defensive linemen and defensive ends running after him all night. They gave a full effort, but when it came down to the second half and making some adjustments and keeping him from doing what he wanted to do and rolling out and passing on the run, it just really absolutely limited this offense, and it was running clock. And the last time I left you guys, they had just gotten an interception. You know, Gallatin never got the ball back. They just ran the ball down the field and just let the clock milk out. So the final score is going to be 42-7 Beach. But again, like I said, Gallatin had a really good first half. There's a lot of things that defense can hold its hat on. You know, losing your starting quarterback in the first quarter the way they did. I mean, the crowd went silent. I mean, it looked bad. The kid was down for a solid 2 minutes. I mean, I thought it was something serious for a second. And the way the team rallied and fought was very, very impressive. I mean, just looking at these two teams, you could just tell that Beach was the more dominant team, the more athletic team, the bigger team, the faster team. And the way Gallatin fought to the end, I mean, it looked like in the first quarter when they went up 14-0 just like that, that it was going to be running clock in the first half. But, you know, the way they fought, the way they held off, it's something that they can take forward. And for a freshman quarterback, with as small as he is, with as much time as he has to gain more experience, I'm sure he can take a lot going forward for this Gallatin team.
Love it. Junie, as always, man, thank you for the update, for the great insights, everything else. We really appreciate you. There's a lot of big games next week, but I think you're going to be in studio with me next week. So look forward to having you here when our man Elijah is taking a sabbatical. So look forward to hanging out with you next week,
Junie. Sabbatical to Vegas.
Junie in studio. Thanks, brother.
Absolutely, guys. Have a great night. Keep killing it.
All right. Thank you, Junie Riddle.
Godspeed.
On the Gallatin and Beach game tonight. All right. We'll take a break. We come back. Scoreboard update. A lot of games going final. Another exciting night of high school football. You listen to the Game Blitz right here. 102.5, 106.3. The game brought to you by National Playmakers Academy and Apple Collision Center. All right, welcome back to the Game Blitz. Man, scores are flying in fast and furious right now. I was writing a few down there before that happens. We're going to effort our good friend Wade Neely, who's on the call of the Fayetteville game tonight. And what a great win by Fayetteville. They win 38-2 over Red Bank. Battle of the Unbeatens. We'll talk to Wade in a little bit. But as we talk, we tell you every time, top and bottom of the hour, scoreboard time. Yeah, let that get into your system. All right, here we go. Scoreboard time. Blackman over Rockville, 56-28. Loretto over Cascade, 23-13. Mork County over Collinwood, 35-0. 1 minute left in the game. Elijah, Coffee County, 26. Cookville, 7.
Ooh, time to hand over the sticks.
Sorry that, buddy. Wayne County, 28. Cornersville, 12. Davis Academy wins over Good Pasture, 34-7. Huge game in the region. McCauley right now leads Father Ryan, 28-13. 28-14, Fayetteville over Red Bank, 38-2. We'll get more on that in just a moment. Forest over Richland, 21-19. Beach beats Gallatin, 42-7. A final here, Pearl Cone with a tough one. They beat Greenbrier, though, 19-6. Baylor over Hendersonville, 56-14. Eagleville over Huntland, 21-13. Smith County over Jackson County, 41-0. Lincoln County leads Columbia, 18-0. DCA in the third quarter still leads Mount Juliet Christian, 56-0. Mount Pleasant beat Summertown, 34-0. National Christian over Columbia Academy, 24-14. Hollow Rock Brewston beats our friends in Perry County, 56-46. Pope John
Ooh,
Paul.
A shootout.
Yeah, it is. Pope John Paul tied with Catholic. They're in the fourth quarter, tied at 21. Stacey Camp over Portland, 21-14. Oakland leads Riverdale right now, 42-6. That game is a minute left in the fourth quarter. Warren County is up over Shelbyville, 31-24. Minute left in that game. Sturge Creek over Siegel, 14-13. Smyrna leads Dixon County, 39-14 in the fourth. It's a big win for Smyrna. Lawrence County beats Tullahoma, final 14-10. Franklin County, final over Spring Hill, 49-0. Upperman in overtime beats DeKalb County, 17-16. East Robertson over Westmoreland, 29-7. White House leads Stewart County, 49-7. And the last score I wrote down, and I don't want to put him down because they're having a great year, Lewis County knocks off Scotts Hill, 33-0. Lewis County, Elijah, now 7-1 on the season right there. So that's your scoreboard update.
Wow.
With a lot of scores, a lot of finals, and some still out there having their updates in a little bit. But that's about 95% of them for you right now that's happening. Anything stands out to you tonight, Elijah?
I'm excited to hear from our guy Noah McKay from the UC Reporter about how that Upperman and DeKalb County game ended. I mean, overtime, 17-16, with everything that was on the line in that game. I mean, we mentioned earlier in the show that that game is an eliminator game in Region 4, 4A. There are four teams with one loss going into tonight in region play. DeKalb County and Upperman were two of those four teams. Not saying DeKalb County can't win the region. They're still technically, mathematically eligible. However, that would require Stone and or Macon to lose to Cumberland County and or Livingston Academy. Those aren't going to happen. So, I mean, DeKalb County is now staring down the barrel of a region, a playoff road game. They're going to be in the playoffs. But tonight was a difference. A one-point game in overtime was the difference between them hosting a playoff game at home and having to travel to Chattanooga. They're going to have to be traveling to Chattanooga.
Yeah, let me get your thoughts on this one, too. Knox Catholic just scored. They lead Pope John Paul 28-21. That's a big D2 Class 3A East Middle Region game. And that's, you know, NBA and Baylor running away with it. Now you got three teams who are fighting for two spots. This is, if Pope loses this one and Catholic gets the win, that's a pretty crushing loss for Pope John Paul, Elijah.
Because then Pope John Paul is going to have to be going on the road in their playoff game, more than likely. I mean, Father Ryan's at 0-3 in that region, that East region right now. Pope John Paul at 1-2. They're going to be sweating it out at that point. And I mean, the win is significant for Knox Catholic. I think they still have to play Macaulay again, if I'm not mistaken.
That's their final region game. So if they lose that game, they're out of the playoffs. And so right now, Macaulay's on top of Ryan, 28-14. So if they win that game, they got two wins. Then Pope has to win and look for some luck later on. Hey, real quick, Elijah, let's go to Wade Neely. He was a sideline reporter tonight. Let's go to the phone lines brought to you by Elijah Campbell Enterprises.
Oh, this is a good one.
Wade Neely's on the call of the Fayetteville Red Bank game. Wade, good evening. How are you, buddy?
Hey, good evening, fellas. It's a treat to be with you guys before 10 o'clock. Fayetteville, big win, 38-2. In a battle of two undefeated teams versus Red Bank tonight.
Well, you know, Elijah's been talking on it. It's more than just a battle of unbeaten. You're talking about a 4A team that got their butt thumped by a 1A team. What was Fayetteville doing so good tonight, Wade?
Yeah, game came out, and Fayetteville set the tone early. They had a beautiful drive to start things off. They go up 7-0, and Red Bank had an ill-advised pass. They threw four interceptions on the night, and that pass was returned for a touchdown. And honestly, 14-0, you can see the energy just deflate from the sideline over at Red Bank. And they handed Fayetteville a 28-0 loss last year. That was the only game that Fayetteville lost all season, regular season. And tonight, it was just revenge on the mind of Fayetteville. And yes, they're 1A, but, you know, they won the state championship a couple years ago. And they are a very, very talented team that does not play like your traditional 1A team.
Talking to Wade Neely, friend of the show and a really good broadcasters on the sideline for this battle, the unbeatens, where Fayetteville violently removes Red Bank from the Elijah Campbell undefeated club. Good bouncers in play there. But Wade, for a lot of people that aren't familiar with Fayetteville, we've talked about them a lot this year. We definitely had put tabs on that game against Moore County, which is a huge game with region implications that, you know, we'll look at the end of the year, probably be the one that won them that region. But for those that aren't familiar with them and their style of play, how would you describe it? And what makes them so good to be able to take on a 4A team and just take them to the woodshed like they did? Because not a lot of 1A teams kind of have that firepower.
There's no doubt about it, and it really kind of starts. They have several elite playmakers. They've got a very talented young man by the name of Isaiah Thomason, who's a senior. He's a Memphis commit. He is an absolute bruiser at that linebacker position. He can also catch the football, and they have a really terrific keep your eyes on the name of Sam Willoughby, which is an outstanding name in its own right. But this sophomore, he's like a baby Vince Young. He's long, he's lanky, he can throw, he can run, and he torched Red Bank pretty good tonight. And just the defense, again, they had four interceptions tonight. Red Bank just had zero answers offensively. Fayetteville is an explosive team. I think that's what really separates them from your traditional single-A teams. They throw the ball a lot. They have a couple really elite-level playmakers, and they are very explosive. And we've seen them run it up on a number of single-A schools this year, and tonight they kind of did the same thing. They won 38-2. The teams came out at halftime, and Red Bank said, you know what, it's not our night. We're going to let the clock run early. And Fayetteville scores late to go up 38-0. Red Bank actually got a safety on the very last play of the ball game, but it was start to finish a clinic by Fayetteville City. The Tigers win big tonight.
We're talking to Wade Neely, the voice of Giles County, but tonight he's double-dipping on the sideline for Fayetteville. We love atmosphere. Elijah and I love to talk about atmosphere in games tonight. That's mm-hmm. What was the atmosphere like there tonight? Because you welcome in this 4A team who's unbeaten. You've got a 1A team who's unbeaten. What was it like there tonight, Wade?
You know, it was electric, and I don't know how this played out, but tonight was actually Fayetteville's homecoming, which you think, you know, usually reserved for a team you maybe have a chance to rough up on. But coming into the game, it was an absolutely electric atmosphere. Like I said, that was the only game that Fayetteville lost all last year in the regular season. They lost 28-0 on the road at Red Bank. And I think the team and the coaching staff really just kind of challenged Fayetteville. They said, you know, we did not play our best last year by any stretch versus these guys, and the crowd had their back. It was a raucous environment. But my first time ever over at Fayetteville, my good friend Chris Murdoch is their boys basketball coach, been to many basketball games over there, and they got a great program. But tonight, Tiger Field was absolutely electric, and they rallied off that energy and fed. Big win tonight.
Well done. Wade, let me ask you this. Why were the importance that we had you on before 10? Where are you going tomorrow?
I'm just running your friendly neighborhood 10K down here in Pulaski tomorrow, and so trying to get a good night's rest, trying to make sure we count our sheep before we go to bed. So I'm excited about that. You know what I'm talking about.
I got you, brother. Hey, man, go ahead.
I was gonna say, hey, Joe, real quick. I also want to point out the Giles County announcer in me wants to point out that Giles County big win last night versus Sequatchie County to wrap up their region. They moved to 6-2. And they go on the road to take on 6A Cleveland next week, who beat Maryville a couple weeks ago. And this Red Bank team tonight beat Cleveland earlier this year. So Giles County will get a fun matchup over in the Eastern time zone next week. And because of the Eastern time zone, I have a feeling I'll talk to you before the 10 o'clock hour next week.
Oh, we love that, Wade. Hey, thanks, brother. Safe travels. And we'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
All right, thank you, guys. See you soon.
All right, Wade Neely, he's the voice of everything down there. All right, Elijah, we're going to take a quick break. We'll try to get Everett more coaches on this side. A lot of scores that come in. Just got a final here. Nashville Christian defeated Columbia Academy 31-14. We'll have more scores, all that coming up after the break. This is The Game Blitz brought to you by Apple Collision Center and Nashville Playmakers Academy on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. All right, welcome back to The Game Blitz here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game, brought to you by our good friends at Apple Collision Center and Natural Playmakers Academy. Let's go back to the phone line, brought to you by Elijah Campbell Enterprises, the head coach of the Blackman Blaze, one Chandler Thygard, the big win that out of Rockville. Coach, as always, we love having you. Congratulations, big win. Tell me how you guys got it done tonight.
Hey, thanks, guys. Yeah, appreciate y'all having me again. Honestly, we finally played our full four-quarter game. So we had, I believe, seven stops on fourth down on defensively, and then, you know, we rolled up another 570 yards of offense. Jack Reisner threw for 250 and two touchdowns. Peyton Thomas threw for 102 touchdowns. You know, we ran the ball for, 250 yards, complimentary game there. Justin Brown went over 160 with two touchdowns, Campbell Lee 100, and Ben Marshall had a touchdown and two more rushing touchdowns. So it was a fun night spreading the ball around and got a lot of people involved. And so good night for the Blaze.
You know, you're playing a team, Rockville, which has been hot and cold this year. And, they've been hot, they've been cold. But, it's a region game, and, their players are your players and vice versa. So to get a win like this in convincing style, you got to be awfully proud of your guys, because I'm sure Rockville gave you their best effort.
They definitely did. And there was a lot of stuff, said before the game and this summer and, everything from last year. And so it's kind of turning into a rivalry game. So it was a big deal to us. And our coaches and players, and so I'm just happy to see them, after the game be so excited and be so happy. And to spread the ball around to so many people is really exciting, So all those kids are happy. Parents are happy. I mean, the JROTC kids are doing 62 push-ups in the flames, so it was a good night.
Well, I thought
Black and Blaze is on. Oh, there we go. Will you lose me?
Ah, you're there. Okay.
I got you. You got me now?
Yeah, Coach. There we go. Yeah, we got him. Coach, appreciate you joining us again. It feels like it's been a little bit, but did you say your team had 7 fourth down stops tonight?
Yeah, something like that. I'm looking. It felt like a lot. I don't know. Maybe not 7, but I know we had a lot of fourth down stops defensively and kind of, they would drive the ball and then they got down there in field goal range or just right outside of it. We were onside kicking every time, so they didn't go very far. And then we would get a fourth down stop and kind of went from there. But I'll have to go back and check the stats on that deal.
And, Coach, one of my favorite things about your team is obviously the high-octane offense. You talk about you guys going over 500 yards again. You guys have playmakers all over the place. But full disclosure, I'm a New Orleans Saints fan. I love watching Taysom Hill. The guy plays tight end. He's quarterback. He's special teams. It sounds like you've deployed Ben Marshall in a similar way. You have a really good athletic tight end that's taken some snaps directly and kind of been playing like a wildcat situation. But what's it like having a player like that to have on your offense who is really athletic and just provides a lot of versatility and different looks for you to be able to show other defenses?
Well, it's a lot of fun for a play caller. We actually have two. So Ben Marshall is the tight end going to Cal, who rushed for 2 touchdowns out of the Wildcat. But then, we've got Peyton Thomas, which is, I guess, like our backup quarterback. But he also plays wide receiver and tailback. And then we'll use Peyton and Jack together, So Peyton's throwing balls from the tailback position. And so for him to throw for another 100 yards and 2 touchdowns, behind Jack's 250 and 2, that's pretty special. That doesn't happen a lot. So I'm happy for those two quarterbacks and then obviously for Ben.
We're talking to Blackman head football coach Chandler Thygard. They got a big win over Rockville tonight. All right, Coach, final two games of the season, Cookeville and Siegel. Only one of those is a region game. How do you approach the Cookeville game? I know you want to win all the games and everything, but you got a big region game going after that. You just tell the guys, look, we got Cookeville this week. That's all we care about. Then we're about Siegel, because that's tough for these kids when their mind wants to wander to a team that's, within the same county they're in. How do you approach this week?
Yeah, and it's going to be even weirder, guys, because we're probably going to host Cookeville in the first round of the playoffs 2 weeks from then. So we know we're going to play them twice in the span of 3 weeks plus another region game against Siegel. So it's definitely going to be a challenge. We know that whatever we run in the first game, they're going to study and all that for the first round of the playoffs. So that's different. I'm not used to that, where you play that team 2 times in 3 weeks, but we're going to see it here soon.
Did you guys wrap up second place tonight in the region? Am I reading this correctly?
Yes, we did. Yeah, so we're going to host the first round playoff game, and most likely it's going to be the number 3 seed, which is probably going to be Cookeville. So that's going to be an interesting deal.
Mm. I'll take it easy on my boys there, Coach. But last thing for me too is you have a lot of seniors on this team, a lot of players that have played together for a long time. They've been able to establish really good relationships with each other, and you have a really tight-knit group. But what does it mean for you guys to be able to host a playoff game and to be able to be in a more advantageous situation to put yourself in a position to go deep in the playoffs with this group?
Well, I think it's going to be our first time hosting a playoff game in, I believe, like 6 years. So it's been a minute around here. So it's going to be a big deal for those seniors. We talked going into the season about we have a chance to do some things at Blackman that have either never been done before or only a couple times before. So our next thing is to win 2 more games. I believe if we win 10 games plus you know, host the first round plus get to the third round. And, you know, you're talking top four in school history and that kind of stuff. So that's what we're trying to do. You know, Blackman historically has never been to a state championship, only to the semifinals one time and to the quarters, I believe, five or six times. So, you know, we're trying to do something that hasn't been done. It's obviously very difficult because I think this region is the hardest region for public school football in the state. But so it makes it hard every single week. So Siegel is no joke either. But we got to get through Cookeville next week and take it game by game.
Beautiful. Coach, as always, thanks for coming on the show and congratulations. And we hope to talk to you for a while. Yeah, we love you having a part of the show, Coach. Thank you.
Let's keep it going. Appreciate you guys. Go Blaze.
All right, Chandler Thygard, head coach at Blackman. And
thank you, Coach.
Look at that, Elijah. You do 99.99% of the research, but I was able to the breaking news. They got second in the region. I'm so proud of myself.
They got to clinch it. Your brain, the supercomputer, was able to mathematically eliminate Rockville, Riverdale, and Stewart's Creek and Siegel all from that second place spot. And kind of speaking of those last two teams, Stewart's Creek and Siegel, Joe, got a fellow on who was at that game, and it sounds like it was a thrilling finish. Marthany Sanders on the line with us right now. And Marthany, it was a 14-10 game at halftime, and it looked like you had a good old-fashioned rock fight in the second half that ended in thrilling fashion.
Oh, yes. Yes, sir, it did, man. Like you said, 14-10 at the half, and then we get into a big, physical game in the second half between Stewart's Creek and Siegel. And in the end, Siegel got a chance to put a couple points on the board. They hit a field goal to cut it down to 14-13. And then on the final drive, had a chance to actually go down and kick a game-winning field goal, but it came up just short. And Stewart's Creek held on for a 14-13 victory.
My goodness, what was that like before the field goal? I mean, was it excitement, quiet crowd? What was going on?
Honestly, guys, it was a wild drive because there was a 3rd and 26 to where it seemed like that there was going to be an incomplete pass and Stewart's Creek might have had the game wrapped up then. But then we have a pass interference call that gives Siegel a new life or a shorter third down to make it 3rd and 11. And then on that 3rd and 11, there's a holding call to make it 3rd and 1. And then all of a sudden, Siegel gets that first down, constantly driving the ball, and then there's just a couple of wild plays there that could have went either way for both teams. And in the end, it came down to 6 seconds left, ball on the 27-yard line for Siegel. And at that point, they just went on ahead and tried to, you know, that game-winning field goal, and it came up just short. I mean, probably about a couple yards short for the kicker to ultimately be the hero, but obviously they fall short. And you can see the emotions, like, on the kids' face after the game. They were heartbroken because, you know, losing a game like that is tough. No matter, you know, the league, the district, whether it's public school, private school, losing a game like that is just tough, and you can see the emotions on the Siegel sideline, as far as, you know, sad emotions, and then obviously overcome with joy with the Stewart Creek sideline as the clock is fired.
My goodness, you've been in some great games, Marthany. What a year! Hey, thank you for the coverage tonight, man. We really appreciate you because that's a heck of a game with a lot of implications there. So, thanks for your time, brother. We appreciate you.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I have a good one.
All right, Marthany, Elijah, look at that. I mean, it's still. You know, Coach Thygard talked about that region being the toughest in the state. I'm not going to argue with him. Oh, no. Elijah, he's been raptured. All right, we'll take a break here. We'll try to connect back with Elijah in just a moment. And so we got 2 more hours to go. So we'll give you a full school board update coming in. We'll effort some of these coaches. Still got a fun night ahead. Again, a light night of high school football because week 8 and week 9, a lot of schools were on fall break, but they'll come back for week 10 and week 11. And then we're into the playoffs. It's amazing. We've already come this far. So, all right, so buckle in. We've got 2 more hours. A lot of fun for you coming here on the Game Blitz. Brought to you by our good friends at Apple Collision Center and National Playmakers Academy right here on 102.5, 106.3 the game.